Welcome to the Biochar podcast presented by Antbig. Our podcast features experts speaking about biochar, how it's made, its uses and applications, and the impact it has socially, economically, and environmentally. Antbig is a not-for-profit industry group, and as a global leader in biochar, assists companies, governments, and institutions in the effective production and use of biochar. Antbig works to streamline education, research, collaboration, and the commercial uptake of biochar and wood vinegar. Our aim is to help create a more sustainable future, greater economic prosperity, job opportunities, and an improved quality of life for all of us. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi everyone, I'm Don Coyne, current CEO of ANZ Biochar Industry Group, acronym ANZBIG, and I'm joined today by Sam Sagami, our cluster manager. On today's episode, we will be discussing biochar's role in green diesel production. In today's podcast, we will discuss the various components of pyrolysis and gasification process, their applications, and the economics, including the keys to open carbon markets.
And to help us discuss the topic today, we have Jennifer Lauber-Patterson, Managing Director of Frontier Impact Group. She is a pioneer in climate solutions with 30 years in banking and energy companies experience, environmental markets, particularly carbon markets, and sustainable solutions. She's pioneered one of the first green electricity deals 25 years ago and started the first carbon markets business at the ANZ Bank in early 2000s. A key passion for Jennifer is to demonstrate how bioenergy can support the regeneration of Australian landscape.
Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you. Such a pleasure to be here, Sam and Don.
Okay. So, Jennifer, you've been working on a green diesel or renewable diesel project for some time now, and you presented at our 2018 conference. Now it seems, long time ago now. Now it seems it's finally come to fruition in partnership with Carnarvon Petroleum Group. So congratulations.
Thank you. We're really, really thrilled. Thank you, Don. Yeah,
that's great. So first up, can you give us a brief background and overview of how this project came to be?
Yes, it has been a bit of a journey, as you've highlighted, Don. I've been involved in renewable energy for over 25 years now. Started in coal-fired generation and quickly realised that where my passion was producing renewable energy and climate solutions. You know, how could I make a difference in terms of climate risk that was facing the planet? I moved from energy into banking, as we mentioned. And one thing I found with banks, they play a very important role and loved my time in banking. But what I found was when it was a technology that wasn't well understood in the banking sector. So, and even when I was in the banking sector, it was really hard to get financing for behind the meter solar projects. And that would be unheard of now because everyone is financing it. But what I found is quite often it takes time within all the regulations and rules and challenges that the banks have that they have to meet in order to support new technologies, even if they're commercially demonstrated. So whilst I was there, there were all these amazing technologies that I was able to identify, but quite often those project developers failed in getting funding. And again, it was because of all the challenges in being in banking and all the hoops that banks have to be able to satisfy. So what I did, one of the reasons I left was because I wanted to help technology developers commercialize and to scale up because I thought it was a gap. Because once you're scaling up, then the banks will get involved and they'll play that important role in terms of bringing capital in the market. But who is going to provide that support and hold the hands of those technology developers? And so since I've left banking, you know, at the moment we're involved in green hydrogen in a big way. We're also involved in solar batteries, also in the clean, in the ag tech sector as well. These are all important sectors we see in terms of transitioning to net carbon zero, which is where we have to go for the benefit of our planet. But what hasn't been, but what I think is real and a really important part that hasn't got enough attention is the role that renewable diesel can play in the market. And why is it such a great opportunity? Well, as you mentioned in my intro, Sam, I think that we can produce renewable energy, we can do it in a circular way, and we can do it in a way that can restore landscapes. And that is amazing if you can achieve all that, because I think it does support a circular economy. We utilise imports in the market that are waste streams at the moment quite often. We burn over 1 million tonnes of biomass each year, which pollutes the environment. And we could use that and provide that into a value-added solution. It's a huge opportunity. So what I believe is this is a technology that needs to be part of the mix. Hydrogen will be important, electrical will be important, but the role renewable energy in the form of renewable diesel is equally as important as any of those other solutions. And I'll talk more about that when in some of the further questions I'm assuming you will be asking. But I got involved in this technology 7 years ago now, and that shows you how tough it is. And I've got to say, I never understood how tough it was going to be being an entrepreneur until I started on this journey. But when you do, you become so passionate and you just realise how important it is. And there were a few, there were a lot of challenges that we had to overcome from the start. But what is the good news is we've overcome those challenges. The timing is right, and we've developed a business model that we think is exceptional, IP, in order to be able to scale up this technology. And the impact it can have is huge. So that's how the journey has been tough, but we're really excited about how impactful we can be in the very near future.
It's an amazing journey. So thank you for sharing with us so openly there. You know, could you just explain a bit about the technology that you're using to create the green diesel? And I suppose, why are you so passionate about it? I mean, you kind of alluded to your passion right there in the beginning, but, if you could just speak to that a bit more.
Yeah, no, the technology is referred to as high temperature pyrolysis in terms of the way it's described. But, for people that aren't of a technical nature, it is quite a difficult process to understand. But effectively, you're using organic waste streams and you can convert them through this high temperature pyrolysis process, which is done in the absence of oxygen that produces a syngas. And high temperature pyrolysis systems utilising syngas is a technology that is now well understood in Australia, I believe. The bit that our technology does really well and is proven at the commercial scale is converting it to an actual renewable diesel, drop-in diesel. So it's the distillation process that enables syngas to be converted into a renewable drop-in diesel. So we don't have to process it through another refinery or anything. It's all a whole solution in our process. So it's really, quite an exciting commercially proven technology. Why I'm so excited about this, there are many different reasons, but one of them is the aspect around fuel security. Fuel security is an urgent risk to Australia at the moment. And it's not a risk that I think we should be not addressing in a proactive way now. And the government has made some good progress in terms of, funding some refineries in Australia to make sure they keep going. But what an awesome opportunity with the technology like this and others that are in the market to actually support a transition that is sustainable. And I think that's the exciting opportunity. And because these plants can be put into the regional areas, which is where we need the food security as well, doesn't it make sense to actually implement this strategy? And the impact it can have on fuel security could be enormous at a time that we might need it. And as we know, there are risks that happen in the market, and fuel security is one that has been raised as an issue for some time. We're meant to have 21 days of fuel security. Even 21 days doesn't sound that good to me, but from what I understand, and I think the federal government has tried to recently manage that, but we've gone down to as little as 10 days of fuel security. And that would mean, you know, no diesel to power transport, to power, the agricultural sector, to produce food to supermarkets and those sorts of things. And I think that's pretty scary.
I was just about to say, it does sound quite scary, yeah. Stephen, thinking about the impact that can have and the knock-on effect that it has as well.
Absolutely. And what's exciting is we've got the solution. We have a solution that can actually address that. And it won't happen overnight, but the earlier we start, the better. And it'll give us independence. It'll give us more independence around our fuel as well. And the other reason I'm passionate about it is because it helps communities. One of the things that we identified reviewing the project and its benefits to the community from an economic basis, which is one of the elements that we need to look at, is per ton of dry biomass equivalent, the economic value, just taking into account the renewable fuel facility, is $900 a tonne. When we compare it to, now that's a huge value, particularly when you compare it to the fact that quite often we burn some of the biomass or it gets diverted to landfill. It's a huge economic benefit, isn't it? Absolutely. If we export it, it's only around $230 a tonne. There is a really strong position economically to be doing more with our biomass in Australia. Some governments, which I'm really impressed with, state governments do have preference in their procurement processes for supporting initiatives in Australia. And I think that's good government policy making. And it makes a lot of sense. And what I'm hoping to see is that we can use more of the biomass in Australia going forward and to create these economic opportunities in these communities. Because it's not just the $900 a tonne, it's also the jobs, significant number of jobs in areas involving clean energy. How exciting is that? And then the products that we produce. And some of these products that I know Don has a little passion for, including biochar, is extraordinary, the benefits that can have to communities and the benefits it can have to the landscape. And we've also got wood vinegar, which I might talk about later, that also has some co-benefits. So it is a circular economy in action that we can see happening. And you can imagine the social benefits of having something that supports a circular economy, the energy security, helping farmers improve their carbon in their soil, or helping plant shelter belts. There are so many things that can be done as part of this project. And, you know, that's why I'm so excited about it. And I think it is so community focused. And, you know, to me, I'm very passionate about providing that community support.
Yeah, it really sounds like we can hear that passion coming through, and just to hear the impacts that it can have is amazing. I'm just wondering, you know, what are the challenges that you've seen in the 7 years of being an entrepreneur and being in this space?
It is whenever you're doing something that's new, and you don't, particularly if you don't have a big balance sheet, which unfortunately, whilst I came from banking, I wish I had a bigger balance sheet before I left. but if you're not a big entity in particular, it's really, it does have its challenges as a when you're a small player. So getting funding and being able to self-fund it and bringing equity in, you know, that has been the challenge, and getting people to believe in what you're doing. But also the regulatory side, you know, it's been very difficult to start a renewable diesel market when you had a diesel price that, you know, hit the lowest prices ever in the market. And you're trying to get prices that are much higher. What I am seeing is really good policy in certain countries around, for example, renewable fuel targets. So in the UK now, you are mandated to have to produce a certain amount of renewable diesel, and New Zealand are going down that path as well. But what that does is, because it's an international market, it drives the price for renewable diesel. But where possible is, whilst we can sell to those international markets, we are in negotiations with corporates in Australia who we are hoping will at least close to match those prices, so we can keep the renewable diesel here in Australia. And because it's still competitive as a transition to net zero carbon, we think there is that appetite in Australia, and we're really excited by the corporate response that we've received so far.
Wonderful. Thanks, Jennifer. So, yeah, I guess the thing I love about this project is that we're mining new carbon instead of the old carbon. And we've talked about the biomass. You know, it's, you called it organic waste streams. It's also called feedstocks. So can you just explain what are the biomass sources you intend to process? And just an idea of the sort of volume, weight per annum of biomass that you can process through your, through this project.
Yeah, so with every project or biorefinery, as we are calling it, it's 100,000 wet tonnes. So assuming 50% moisture or something nearby, it's about 50,000 tonnes of dry waste. And what that will produce is 18 million litres of renewable diesel. What is great with this process is the flexibility, because in that biorefinery, we have four modules. So effectively, we can actually in a very flexible way adjust it to five or six to accommodate what the available waste stream is in that area and that region. And I think that's what is important, because if you have to travel too far from a logistics perspective, the economics just don't stack up. So what you've got to do is suit the technology size to where the resource is to avoid those logistics. And that's a really important part of it. In terms of the type of biomass streams, there's a number. There's obviously forestry residues. One of the areas that we're putting a lot of time into is the thinnings, ecological thinnings. There's a lot of scope around that. Even biomass that has been burnt through fires, wildfires, there's millions and millions ton of it in Australia. And unfortunately, the reality is we are going to have more fires. So let's find an opportunity to be able to use that rather than burning it. That's what we do. We burn it because we don't have a use for it. So this is an opportunity to actually use it in a productive way. We can even use some plastics, but that's not in our initial scope at the moment, but we can use plastics, and we can even use municipality waste. And so that's another area. But what we found is, with our initial projects, what we want to focus on is biomass, because from an EPA perspective, and Sam, you were talking about some of the challenges, There's many, but going through environmental approvals is one of those aspects. But what is pretty exciting about this project, it's always challenging for the first project in a country of its type, but it is leading this technology from an environmental perspective. So, and because we've got reference plants, it does make it a little bit easier for us. But, you know, that's just another hoop that we have to go through. But it's easier to stick with the biomass sources that are perhaps perceived to be cleaner resources. So it's a wide range, but that's where we're starting at the moment.
Great. And what are the volumes or weight per annum of all the products that will be produced from the project?
Yes. So in addition to the renewable diesel, one of the areas that I'm really excited about and share a common enthusiasm with Don is biochar. And it's 8,300 tonnes of biochar. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's actually enormous and it can go a long way. And biochar has a lot of positive, it can be applied in just so many different areas, but 8,300 tonnes of that. And the other one is 5.5 million litres of wood vinegar we're also producing. Now, one thing I did mention was wood vinegar earlier, and this is one of the aspects which helps support the circular economy and supporting the community, because wood vinegar is known to improve the nutrient uptake in plants. It helps with germination and it can help in many different ways. What we intend to do is to work with, you know, some of the best minds in this sector, some of who I've connected through Don. Thank you, Don. In order to make sure that we utilise our wood vinegar in the best possible way. But given that our first project is going to be in Western Australia and near the wheat belt, what we'd like to do is develop a product that can help the wheat belt enhance its soil health and the carbon in its soil in particular.
Thanks, Jen. As far as Carnarvon goes, what products are they creating from the green diesel? Your average Corum group, are they?
We love Carnarvon. We love their, they're a real innovative thinker and they're just so professional and so good at what they do. Really passionate about also the opportunity. Of course, they're big corporate, so they're going to look at the economics. But what's great is the economics does stack up for them. And the areas that they can see this moving into is obviously any sort of transport areas and opportunities, road transport. As we know, it replaces diesel. So whether it's rail, whether it's shipping, whether it's trucks. But the other exciting one is jet fuel, because whilst we might have innovation in the hydrogen and the electric space on the ground, I think it'll be some time before we can get a solution in the air. And I think the green diesel side, that's where it's going to play a particularly important role. And that's an area that we would also like to participate in, although we are commencing with road transport initially.
Wow, that's amazing. And are there any other products produced from the project that you will seek to find markets for?
What we're doing is a lot of work around the biochar and what we can do with that. We do have an agreement with an overseas provider, but it does give us flexibility because we needed that from an investability perspective. But what we're really trying to work hard is because we want to support that circular economy, is how can we use these products in Australia and develop value add in Australia? So that's an important part of what we're doing and looking at what we can use that biochar for. In terms of biochar, it can be used for animal feed even. And some of these things should not be underestimated, because with the cost of carbon credits going up, and the implications of methane reduction, that could become really valuable in terms of generation of carbon credits. It's used for water filtration, it's used for reduced need for water in the soil, and as we know, what it can do for soil carbon is quite incredible in the health of the soil. So they're the more traditional ways that it's been used, but even dealing with contaminated soils is another good. It's endless, isn't it, Don? But the other areas is graphene, because graphene can come from biochar, and graphene is basically 100% carbon. in our biochar, we've got basically a very high quality form of graphene, which is it's actually got 70% of graphene in the biochar product. So very high quality. So it opens up a lot of new markets. A lot of demand for this biochar and graphene in the international market. But again, we want to help create those markets in Australia. And some of the areas that I know that some of the group in the biochar, Australian Biochar Association, has had some great success is in the cement sector, asphalt, just in terms of reducing costs, being more sustainable in the long term, just incredible what it can achieve. In terms of building products, that's another area. Paints and coatings, which is anti-fouling protection, is enormous. 3D printing, increased strength. Lubricants, which reduce the friction. Insulation, that's a really good one. Insulation foam. So you know the cladding issues that we had? This product can overcome those cladding issues. Another one is that's really interesting is personal protection. So in some of the defence forces internationally now, they're using graphene and it can actually stop a bullet from penetrating your uniform. That's how strong it actually is. So as you can tell, there's so many different applications for it. And one of my personal passions is batteries and the role it can play with batteries. So some are saying that it will eliminate the need for lithium, which is quite a game changer, but it will enable batteries to last longer and reduce the cost of them. And you can imagine what that will happen to the energy transition worldwide. So that's another exciting space. So so we're happy to chat with people who are interested in utilising graphene in their end product and work with them with the innovation. We've got a great partner from overseas who's already commercialised some products. So happy to help facilitate that. What we want to see is the market moving, because as we know, Don, the carbon gets stored in graphene and biochar and it doesn't go into the atmosphere like it does when we burn biomass. We actually store all that carbon in that product or in the soil.
Yes, correct. Carbon, we could call it the carbon sink economy as well.
Absolutely, Don.
So look, Jen, I think you've answered what markets that you see the products going into. So I guess finally, talking about carbon sequestration, carbon sinks, the theme of our conference this year is biochar and the carbon drawdown decade. So how do you see biochar and the associated technology that you're using help us achieve more carbon drawdown? You may have just answered it.
The project is net carbon negative, as we know, and part of it being net carbon negative is because we can store that carbon. So without the biochar, that wouldn't happen. So that's a really important point. But in our first project, it's about 180,000 tonnes of carbon that it will be reducing. Now, someone gave me a stat of the benefits of this and they compared it to solar. And they said, look, that's 180,000 tonnes. And what they said to me was, do you know that I'd need a 110 megawatt solar farm to actually get equivalent reduction? And in addition to that, I'd have to utilise 50 times more land than what you do for a renewable diesel project. So, and this is not being negative to solar. I've been one of the biggest solar advocates in the market forever. But what I'm just trying to highlight is how valuable these biorefineries are and the value add they can make to the drawdown of carbon, but overall in overall carbon reduction. So thank you, Don. Thank you, Sam. Really enjoyed being part of this podcast. And really thank you for all your wonderful questions.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. I felt, that was a really good overview and was explained in a really simple way for people to understand. So that's great. And, here we are. We're making the transition from mining fossil fuels to new carbon, so that's a more sustainable source of carbon. And that's what our code of practice is about that we're working on. And we had an interview with our chair, Nigel Murphy, a couple of weeks ago. So it all ties in, and it's really, really exciting. So what is the best way for people to get in touch, in contact with you, Jen?
There is a link via our website. So it's frontierimpact.com.au. We're also going to be launching our Future Energy Australia brand, which is our JV with Carnarvon, which we're really excited about. So there'll be a website there, but that's probably the best, or through you, Don. I'm happy for people to contact through you. But one thing I did want to highlight, if people aren't aware, is the importance in the standards in biochar that you've developed. Because one of the reasons I think biochar, and this was part of the challenges that we're talking about, hurdles, everyone went, oh, biochar doesn't work. I tried it and it didn't work. The problem was with biochar, there's so many different qualities. And if you don't utilise the right grade for the right outcome, it doesn't work. And that's the experience that people had. What's good is the graphene industry have got on top of that early, and they're already recognising that. So one thing that's really important is understanding that a biochar isn't a biochar, that graphene isn't necessarily a graphene, and just understanding what is its best use. And if everyone wants to know who can help provide guidance on that, Don's definitely the man. But we're also happy because we've been having to learn very quickly as well. But thank you, Don.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. Thank you. It was just wonderful. I learned so much about your project and about you. It was wonderful. If you found this episode valuable, please rate and review our podcast. And to get notified about all of our latest episodes, join the AndsBig newsletter mailing list by visiting www.andsbig.org. And until next time, Charles.
Charles, bye.